Hello and welcome to my show, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing on UK Health Radio, your global feel good radio. I'm Dora Walsh and I've been working in the field of natural and functional medicine for over 15 years. I'm a qualified nutritionist and nutritional therapist, and I support my clients to reverse many chronic health conditions like chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, digestive problems, immune issues, autoimmune issues, skin concerns, and more. You can find out more about me on my website, NutriHeal.net, and also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Well, this week, we're going to be talking about the nation's poor sleeping habits and stressful lives and how to help ourselves using specific tea infusions so that we can have better sleep and less stress. 1 in 4 adults gets fewer than the recommended 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night, according to studies from the UK, US, and the Netherlands. The worst affected are women of 40 plus who have the shortest sleep duration and poor sleep efficiency. Now, sleep efficiency is the ratio between trying to get sleep and actually sleeping. And we've all been there before, whether you're a 40 plus woman or not. It's not nice. Also, teenagers sleep less than the optimal 8 to 10 hours a night of sleep for their age group. This is a big problem, and it can pose many challenges to us in terms of our immunity and how we're feeling. Well, this week, we're going to be talking to Dr. Tim Bond. He's a chemist and a natural health expert, and he's working at the Tea Advisory Panel. You can find out more about the Tea Advisory Panel on their website, teaadvisorypanel.com, and also follow them on Twitter at teaadvisorypan. Welcome to the show, Dr. Bond.
Thanks for having me, Dora. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you here. Now, this is a big issue because so many people suffer from poor sleep. They find it hard to get to sleep. It takes a long time. Maybe they have insomnia. Maybe they get to the point where they're even stressed about going to sleep because they feel that they're not going to be able to achieve it. And it becomes a never-ending cycle. There's a lot of things that can be contributing to that. Before we go into talking about that, tell us a bit more about how you came to be a tea expert working at the Tea Advisory Panel. And then we'll go on to talk about the findings of some studies you've done at TAP in terms of the nation's sleeping habits and how they can support themselves with the right tea infusions.
That's great. Well, my experience, I did a number of things from an educational point of view in terms of degree. I did a degree in chemistry. I then did a PhD in sort of interact with humans and animals. So we did some work there on spider toxins and frog poisons. Strangely enough, I then went to a conference in Karachi where I met a man who worked in toad poisons, which got me to the USA where I did some work on separating naturally occurring chemicals to find out which particular one might have benefits on cancer. You know, I did some work on isoflavonoids. So these are products actually linked with benefits for HRT. And then when I looked to get a real job, I found that all those things, natural products, products that interact with humans and our metabolism, separating things and polyphenols, brought me into tea. So I worked for a number of tea companies and I had 25 years in tea, and I was one of the founding members of the Tea Advisory Panel, which we created actually to provide the media with impartial information on health and wellness benefits of tea. The panel includes nutritionists, dietitians, and doctors. And we also, what we tell is bust myths. I mean, for instance, we find there's a lot of people that think that tea is dehydrating. So we commissioned a study, and the outcome of the study showed that 6 to 8 servings of tea were equally as hydrating as 6 to 8 servings of water. So it's water plus.
Amazing. Okay, so you've got a lot of experience in this area, understanding how tea can affect us, and you're the person to talk to. Now, tell us about the findings of the review study you commissioned by the Tea Advisory Panel.
Well, this was a scoping review. So what we do with the review is we look through the scientific literature that's published, and we actually try and look at how tea and herbal teas are then related to, in this case, sleep, anxiety and stress. And we did this because, and I think you referred to it a bit earlier, we call this the triple block. So sleep, anxiety, and stress, very much linked, and they interact with each other. If we're feeling anxious or stressed, obviously we can have difficulty dropping off to sleep, or we're going to basically wake up early with thoughts on our minds. So we looked at actually these three components, because as well as them actually being interrelated, if we can find something that helps one or all three of these, it's going to help all of the others naturally. So we looked at this study and we found 33 different studies that met our scientific criteria for inclusion. That included 8 what we've termed human intervention studies. So that's where you take a bunch of people and you actually give them the treatment, the tea or the herbal tea, and you check what impact that has on their sleep quality, levels of particular stress hormones, and various other things. Really, the outcome of the study is we found that sleep quality, sleep efficiency, and duration, as well as stress management, can be aided by several types of tea. Now, that includes our regular black tea, which is the most consumed type of tea in the UK, but also covers green tea, German chamomile, lavender, rose, jasmine, and passion flower teas.
Oh, right. So it's not just regular black tea and green tea, it's a whole host of teas that can support us.
Absolutely. And teas, plants contain a vast array of naturally occurring compounds. And what's really interesting with plants is that in some cases, those compounds fit in with our metabolism. So they basically actually interact with our hormones, our neurotransmitter systems, et cetera, et cetera. So naturally occurring plant compounds can actually impact on us with positive benefits.
This is great to hear, because a lot of people, they might be reaching out for the wrong compounds if they can't sleep. A lot of people I know, they might be, or having a glass of wine would help them. And we can understand that, but then ultimately it doesn't lead to better sleep ultimately. It might knock you out for a bit. So we really need to be reaching out for the right compounds. And it sounds like tea has a wide array of benefits that can bond to our metabolism, fit in with our metabolism in terms of our hormones and our neurotransmitters to support us in terms of our sleep cycle. So that's wonderful. Let's talk about the key findings also in terms of the effect of a lack of sleep, that what can happen to our health if we don't get enough sleep.
Absolutely. It's a key issue. And sort of depending on, surveys show us that depending on the measure, half of people in the UK are suffering from some form of insomnia, be that trouble to drop off, or as you said, waking during the night or waking early. And actually, a third of people actually have sleep issues once a week. So it is a significant issue. So in the short term, we know that poor sleep quality can affect cognition, so thinking and actually anything that we require our attention. It can actually impact our ability to perform tasks, our level of concentration. It makes us feel tired. We feel fatigued if we don't get enough sleep. And that will impact on our decision-making and our general well-being. So there's an immediate impact of not having enough sleep. But long-term, if we don't actually have less than sort of 7 hours sleep, less than 6 hours sleep, we found that having less than 6 hours sleep actually has been found to boost levels of what we call C-reactive protein. This is an indicator of inflammation in the body. So there are some real chemical markers which show us we have this. And actually, the more long-term health implications, the risk of developing type 2 diabetes, and the risk of being obese, hypertension, depression, and immune function, those are all associated with having less than 7 hours sleep routinely.
This is worrying, because so many people today are suffering from those health concerns, and to hear that sleep or lack of sleep, less than 6 hours of sleep a night, could be a contributor to type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, depression, inflammation, which we know is a precursor to most health problems, most chronic health problems today. This is a big worry. Now, why are so many people struggling to get that good night's sleep, Dr. Tim?
I think the answer is quite simple, and it's called life. I think life today is quite stressful. We have just come through a pandemic, which was very stressful and very unique. But even in our daily lives, we're rushing to get to work. There's pressures at work. There's pressures if you can't find work, cost of living crisis. You can name all of these as basically reasons why we're having trouble. Now, we need some stress in our lives. Stress is a positive thing. Stress is the thing that sort of gets us up in the morning, helps us hit a deadline. But our bodies are not designed to stay in a permanently stressed basis. And this is, I think, where we have the issue. So we're very familiar with the sort of fight or flight system. So when stress, particularly acute stress, hits us, that fight or flight system, and it engages our entire body if we need it to actually help us run away or fight. The opposite to this is the so-called rest and digest state. So here, basically, we don't need to run away from something. We don't need to attend a really important meeting. Here, basically, we're putting all of our efforts into actually resting and digesting. And it takes energy to digest food. So rather than put that energy actually into running around, we're actually putting that energy into sort of our health. So I think there's a whole range of reasons why we're stressed. And I think our lifestyles really don't help us. We know with going to the gym or taking exercise, we know the more we do that, better we get at it. But we don't apply the same rules to things like sleep hygiene, getting up at the same time, going to bed at the same time, actually getting a routine in place, getting us ready for bed, switching off screens, making sure that the room is the right temperature, not too hot. So there's lots of things we can actually help. We're so busy with life, we're not focusing on some of the things that could really help us. And tea and herbal teas are a great support to sleep and reducing anxiety and stress.
It's great to hear. I remember growing up, if I ever had sleep issues when I was a kid, my mum used to give me chamomile tea. And it was at the time before this was all fashionable. She just kind of seemed to know about these things. And I always found that helped a lot. And then I heard about passion flowers. So it is great to have a little answer in your cupboard of different teas, spices, etc. things. They all work as medicine. They work on the same biochemical pathways as drugs. And we always think that we have to go to a drug to help us to get a result, a synthesized drug. But isn't it wonderful to be able to have an actual product that can actually support us?
Absolutely. Hearing you say that is music to our ears here, because what we do find, and I found this a lot in my career, is that the science is catching up to what we actually already know, what we traditionally are told. And chamomile tea is the really good example. And the fact that basically what we're finding from a lot of our studies is basically we know that people are feeling better, and there are, in terms of metabolic indicators that these products are actually having an impact. We do need a bit more study in some of these as to how they're really working. And what you just said sort of brings an item out. So passion flower tea that you just mentioned as well, there's a whole series of chemicals here called polyphenols. Most people will know about polyphenols probably as antioxidants. So again, those things actually help reduce chronic inflammation and other onset pathways to disease states. But there's a particular group in there called flavonoids. And flavonoids are a group of phenolics that actually give fruits and vegetables their sort of vibrant colors. It's found in tea. In fact, black tea is the richest source of flavonoids in the UK, and in fact, in the Northern European diet. It's also found in berries and other things. And really, some of the messaging from the 5-a-day, 7-a-day campaign is based upon the fact that flavonoid-rich fruits, vegetables, and beverages like tea actually help us in our long-term nutrition. And in passion flower, there's a natural flavonoid called chrysin. And chrysin has actually been shown to bind to the benzodiazepine receptor in the brain to reduce anxiety. And this is exactly the same mechanism that is used by the anti-anxiety drug diazepam.
Well, this is such good news. It's so good that you don't have to go down the road of taking diazepam. Now, I'm not judging anybody that does, but most people wouldn't actually want to go down that road. So to hear that a simple cup of passion flower tea can work on those same pathways is amazing, without the side effects and without any addiction, hopefully, Tim. This sounds great.
Absolutely. And then what you said there is completely correct, and we must stress again that we're not suggesting people stop taking prescription medicines that they need. These teas can be very supportive. And when we're looking specifically at sleep, I mean, the tea actually has all the benefits, but none of the downsides, as you said. So we wake up often, a lot of these prescription medicines make us feel quite woozy and drowsy in the morning. That's not the case with herbal teas.
It's great. Now, we'll be back to talk a lot more about the nation's sleeping habits and stressful nights and how to use these specific tea infusions to support ourselves to have better sleep and less stress. We've talked a bit about it already. We're going to delve in a lot more with Dr. Tim Bond, chemist and natural health expert from the Tea Advisory Panel. First, we've got a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Dawn Walsh on UK Health Radio on my weekly show, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing. We're talking about the nation's poor sleeping habits and stress levels and how we can use specific tea infusions to support ourselves to have better sleep and less stress. We're talking to Dr. Tim Bond, chemist and natural health expert at the Tea Advisory Panel. You can find out more about them on their website, teaadvisorypanel.com, and also follow them on Twitter at teaadvisorypan. Definitely check them out. Now, Dr. Bond, we've been talking a bit about the effects of poor sleep on our health, leading potentially to inflammation, but if we're sleeping also less than 6 hours a day, potentially leading to high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, obesity, etc. It's not a good trajectory. So that does kind of wake us up a bit into thinking that this, we need to do something about it. And talked about also the sleep hygiene. So not only the herbs, but also making sure our behaviors around sleep are good. So we have a structure in place and a routine. Now, I guess in your research, you've found that there are all different types of demographics that are affected by poor sleep. What do you think is the group that are most affected by poor sleep?
Oh, it's interesting, Dora. You touched upon the study that was recently done in 2021 in looking at people in the UK, the Netherlands, and the USA. This actually looked at the sleep characteristics of over 1 million people. So it's a big data set. And as we know with science and a lot of these studies, the more data you have, the more robust the statistics are, and the more insightful sometimes the findings can be. So that group actually found that women aged 40 plus had the shortest sleep duration. And you mentioned it as well earlier, poor sleep efficiency. And that can be for a range of reasons. I mean, we need to delve into that a bit more. But again, it comes back with the L word, life sort of in our 40s. We've got career pressures. We've got family pressures. We've got pressures to sort of run the home, make sure we've got food in the fridge. So I think there's a wide range of reasons behind that. But it also impacts teenagers, so half of teenagers sleep less than the advised 8 to 10 hours a night. And that, I think, in a lot of cases, is a lack of structure in terms of the sleep hygiene we came across, but something which is really a great asset in modern life, but also a bit of a bane: screens, laptops, mobile phones. We're all equally guilty. Well, we're all guilty of this. And even I find myself, I have to basically consciously make sure I'm not checking. I've got a message on WhatsApp or someone hasn't emailed me for support in something. So we really need to pay attention to that. And teenagers potentially are the ones who are some of the most connected online with social media. And really, to get a good night's sleep, back to the sleep hygiene thing, you really need to turn your screen off an hour before you go to bed. Really stop thinking about that. If your phone is your alarm clock, then it's good to actually keep the phone away from the bed. It's also good practice to turn the sound down if you can. Mute notifications on whatever social media you have and turn it over so you can't see the screen, but keep it out of touch. So you have to, A, you have to get out of bed to turn it off, which so you've got a much better chance of staying up, but B, you're not going to be disturbed or tempted just to check that phone.
Okay, definitely. Now, it's good to have that in place. And then let's talk a bit more also about the tea. Now, we talked a bit about chamomile and passion flower, and you talked a bit about how passion flower helps us to relax, maybe working in the same way as some other mainstream drugs in the market on some of the same biochemical pathways. But other than passion flower, how does tea help you relax? Because some people might ask the question, how could black tea or green tea help you relax? Because it's full of caffeine. Isn't it going to stress you out and stop you from sleeping?
It's a great question, and people do associate caffeine per se as something which is going to keep you awake and is going to help you, you know, help your attention, help you focus on tasks. What we do find, though, so if we look at a cup of regular black tea, there's about 40 to 50 milligrams of caffeine in that tea. Now, I mentioned earlier that we busted the myths about dehydration. People also think that caffeine is a diuretic. It actually encourages you to pass water. But in our study, we found that 6 to 8 servings of tea were equally as hydrating as water in the same servings. So it's not actually a diuretic. And in the same way, caffeine does actually help you focus. But the level of caffeine that there is in tea is about half there is in coffee. And tea also contains a natural amino acid. It's amino acid. We refer really to the essential amino acids, the building blocks of lysine and protein. But there's actually an amino acid called L-theanine. L-theanine is actually sort of related a bit to GABA, which we know is a neurotransmitter, which helps regulate stress and sleep. So L-theanine can actually have an impact on us. So effectively, it balances out the caffeine in the tea. And as I said, it's pretty unique to the tea is pretty unique in terms of being the delivery mechanism for L-theanine in the UK diet. So it's this balance that tea gives that other beverages don't.
And how many cups of tea would you need to have in order to get enough L-theanine, which is going to be linked to that GABA, that neurotransmitter, to help us stress and our sleep?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. L-theanine, when you look at it in a lab study, it promotes what we call non-drowsy relaxation. Like all natural chemicals, there's a variation in the type of tea, how it's processed and various other things. But looking at some of the actives in there, probably sort of 3 to 4 cups of tea will deliver enough L-theanine to actually have this benefit.
Well, I think a lot of people will be happy about that because we're a massive nation of tea drinkers, aren't we?
We are, yeah, actually. And it's interesting as well. So we look at L-theanine, but tea is very rich. I said it's the richest source of flavonoids in the UK diet. If we think of flavonoids as a bit of a family tree, think of flavonoids as, think of polyphenols rather as furniture. And flavonoids, would be tables. So they're still furniture, but they're just slightly different form. And actually, within the flavonoids, the major polyphenol in green tea is a product called EGCG, epigallocatechin gallate, if you want its full name. But that is actually shown to reduce anxiety and again interact with the GABA receptor, which regulates sleep and stress. So what we find here is aggregate effort or impacts from a lot of the phytochemicals.
Fantastic. Now, what time of day should they be drinking the tea? I guess it shouldn't be too late at night, should it?
Well, no, we always recommend, I mean, if you want to reduce the chances of having to get up during the night to go to the toilet, you probably shouldn't drink anything for the hour before you go to bed. But actually, in all time, really, so we're looking specifically at sleep. Obviously, consuming the beverage in the evening is probably going to have the most benefit. Now, what we say and what we mentioned here is the unique balance of L-theanine and caffeine in tea. It sort of explains why sort of tea can pick you up, but also why tea doesn't stop you going to sleep. So tea consumption during the day actually is something which is beneficial. And actually, we find anything where we're sort of reducing anxiety and stress, those can also be consumed during the day. So really, sort of, I suppose it depends on what you're after. But we've also got to remember these products aid hydration. And if we're looking at especially the older populations, we often find their major source of hydration is tea. And it's something that we need to stay optimally hydrated. And even a drop in about 2% of our hydration status can impact our cognitive functions. So as well as talking about all these other elements, we also know that tea is hydrating. Tea contains fluoride, which obviously helps us with bone and tooth health as well. Green tea can be a breath freshener. So there's lots of additional benefits that are coming along with tea.
I love what you're saying, because I think I love the younger generation. They kind of turn off their parents or their grandparents for only drinking tea to hydrate themselves, drinking tea all day, thinking that we really have to drink water all day. But from what you're saying, it hydrates us in the same way. It works really well. And also it has all of these other benefits as well.
Absolutely. And there's a broad range of physical and mental health benefits that teas are bringing. And there are a lot of studies out there actually showing, again, focusing on the older generations, a lot of new studies coming out in Asia showing that tea consumption really aids maintaining cognitive function into our older years.
It's a good sign, because obviously with the rising cases of Alzheimer's, we need to do everything we can to help ourselves. Now, we talked a lot about black tea and a little bit about green tea and a tiny bit about passion flower tea, but I know there are many teas, and I've looked at your website for the tea advisory panel. I know you mentioned all different types of teas. Are these teas that you mentioned the only teas that could support our sleep, or are there other teas that we could use to address our problems with sleep and our anxiety?
There are, absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons why we speak a lot about tea now, just I suppose I should have looked at this parlance at the beginning. So when we're referring to tea, we're referring to a product specifically comes from the tea bush. The tea bush is Camellia sinensis, related to the garden camellias that we have with the nice flowers. But basically anything that, depending on the way you process that tea, the least processed form of tea is white. Then if we treat it generally to sort of inactivate the enzymes, we get green tea. If we basically activate some enzymes and let it sort of color up, much like an apple goes brown if you leave it on your counter during the day, that accelerates some aeration reactions. If you aerate it partially, you get oolong tea. If you aerate it fully, you get black tea. So teas all come from Camellia sinensis plant. And there's been a lot of science for many decades on that. What we're finding with the herbal teas is that there is such a strong evidence, especially in Europe, I mean, Germany especially, but Germany and France have got a long history of traditional use. And this is where the ideas of chamomile helping you sleep comes from. Because there was such a strong body of basically family knowledge, you mentioned your grandmother saying chamomile tea, there's tended to be less sort of hard science. But as we said, the science is catching up. So absolutely, the green tea will work. Chamomile, we know. So one cup of chamomile for 2 weeks. You know, obviously, longer-term consumption is there. The chamomile will help us from day one. The study was looking to be robust, one cup for 2 weeks, which reduced sleep disruption. So it wakes me up during the time. Lavender tea has been shown to basically help both the elderly. So 2 cups of lavender tea a day low in anxiety and depression in older people. There was an interesting study done to take it on postpartum women, so women who have just given birth. And actually, two cups of lavender tea a day there reduced their self-reported feelings of depression and fatigue. Passion flower, we mentioned. So there are a range of these teas and herbals that actually will help us. And in fact, rose tea has also been shown to help us relax.
Fantastic. Now, how would the lavender and the rose work? Because I remember growing up, people would have these lavender sprays that spray on their cushion or a lavender bag, and you sniff it, and people would say, oh, the smell is very relaxing. I didn't know enough about it, but I just sniff these things and enjoy the smell and feel relaxed. But how does it actually work in our body to help us to feel more relaxed?
So lavender, and the studies here really show that there was a definite element of inhaling the aroma. So lavender has been known, has got a very long history for soothing and mood stabilizing. So studies have shown that drinking and inhaling lavender does have a direct effect on the nervous system and brain. So again, we're back into the area of neurotransmitters. So we're actually finding that basically these aromas are deeply, deeply, ultimately we're evolved beings, but a lot of the core biochemistry behind it goes way, way back, and to sort of other species as well. So these products actually really start interacting with the nervous system and brain. So again, we're switching on and off neurotransmitter pathways.
I've got you. And how long should you be brewing your cup of tea? And is there a different brew time for each type of tea?
There sort of is. I'm broadening with the polyphenols, the flavonoids in tea. And a lot of people in this country, we like our black tea. We love our black tea. But many people think green tea is a little bit too pungent or a little bit too bitter for them. And we find that these catechins, these subsets of flavonoids, if you look at them just by themselves, we get descriptors like bitter and astringent. Black tea softens as you go through it. So if you're going to overbrew some of these green teas, people would say that it becomes a bit too bitter, a bit too pungent for them. So we always say for a cup of green tea, 2 or 3 minutes in water, it's probably just, basically, take your kettle. When the steam is going straight up, it's boiling. But when you can see the steam, it's not quite in a column. The water tends to be at about 80 degrees centigrade. So wait for it to basically get to that and you can brew your tea. The other way of doing it is boil the kettle and then wait a couple of minutes. So in sort of non-boiling green, you're going to get a nice flavored, healthful beverage if you brew it for about 3 to 4 minutes. Black tea needs boiling water, as does oolong, and we brew that for about 5 to 6 minutes. I was brewing mine for 5 minutes with a timer, and you get optimal taste as well as optimal nutrition and health benefits. The herbals, like rooibos, for instance, rooibos contains a couple of naturally occurring sort of sweet-tasting polyphenols. One of them is nothofagin, which you want. So lyles, lavenders, they don't actually have these pungent, bitter principles. So in some cases you can brew them longer, or in other cases you can basically just keep the tea bag in and keep sipping.
Right, so you could keep that in and you get a stronger taste the longer you keep it in, but you don't have to have it in a long time if you don't want to for those ones.
Very much brew to taste. I mean, we would say with all of these, the longer you brew them, the more chance there is for these health promoting actives to get into the brew and into you.
I'd be honest with you, as a nutritionist, I was always keen on brewing as long as possible because I always felt that I was going to get the maximum benefit. And a long time ago, I read that green tea was very anti-aging, so I was brewing that for a very long time, thinking it's going to help me. But it's good to have this kind of little update from you to think about really the making sure you at least have it in for the minimum amount of time in order to get that benefit. So for green tea, 2 to 3 minutes. And also for oolong tea, 5 to 6 minutes. And for the herbal teas like chamomile or lavender, you might just brew it for a very short amount of time, or you might want to just keep the bag in. And also making sure, I mean, I've never heard about this, making sure the water, when it's boiling, having the steam coming out, but not in a column. And then that means it's 80 degrees Celsius. And that's a good temperature for brewing your tea. That's something I didn't know about at all.
Now, it's a good temperature to brew your greens and your whites. Well, I think the herbals and blacks really do benefit with boiling water. And, you know, again, we talk about this with the cost of living crisis. I mean, we've been saying for a while as the tea industry, only boil the amount of water you need. So number one, you only use the electricity for the amount of tea you need. Why shall the entire kettle up if you only want one or two cups? So basically put the number of cups in you want in using your cup, and then you take it out, obviously, into your cups. There are benefits in all around for doing, just thinking about how we're actually preparing our tea.
Yeah, I think this is really important because often we're very unconscious. We're not really thinking about what we're doing. And I think in nutrition, this is really important because the way we prepare our food and our drinks will have an impact on our health. And the more we can prepare them in the right way, the better we're going to do. So obviously with cooking, we want to fry in the right oils. We want to cook at the right temperature. We know very high temperatures are not good. We know that slow cooking is very good. And it's like an art. So the more we can educate ourselves on how to consume these drinks, the better, because we're going to get those benefits for our sleep. We're going to reduce our stress. And there are also many other health benefits to teas, aren't there?
There's an absolutely wide range. And what the science is sort of aggregating now around 3 to 4 cups of tea being the sweet spot for trigger off. Now, what we're talking about here is risk reduction. So black tea and green tea have been actually shown to reduce your chance of developing high blood pressure. What we find here is there's a number of sort of studies, and obviously sort of what your gran told you is more sort of empirical evidence. People have just observed that basically those things help them. So that's sort of almost anecdotal. We then sort of go up the scale. There's a so-called observational study where you will take a group of people through the ages, and you'll ask them some questionnaires about their lifestyle, what they eat and what they drink. And then over the years, there'll be follow-up, so every sort of couple of decades, and we'll see what people's disease states are like, whether they've developed any of these illnesses. And you can then do the statistics on it, and you can take out some obvious sort of issues that might interfere with it. But we're looking at trends here. There are the studies that we spoke to, or we looked at intervention studies. So here you're actually giving a group of people, and anyone who's really into sort of their health studies, and they'll come across phrases like sort of double blind studies, or certainly an RCT, a randomized control study. So we're looking at with an RCT, the simplest way of thinking of an RCT is there's a big group of people, they're divided into two, and people are assigned randomly to either the control group, where they're just given a control, say, if you like, a placebo, and then there is the other group who's actually given the treatment. So there's different ways of doing this. And what we're also finding here, that's very good. If it's blinded, the people taking treatment don't know if they were in the treatment or in the control group. If it's double blinded, it means the researchers undertaking the work don't know. So this is all about creating robust studies. And the top level one of these studies is what we call a meta-analysis. So a meta-analysis is effectively, think about that as a study of studies, where effectively all of the data are pulled together and looked at statistically. So there's a lot of good evidence now for black and green tea, showing that it can actually reduce your risk, as we said, of developing high blood pressure. It can actually reduce your chance of developing cardiovascular disease by 20%. It can actually reduce your risk of developing type 2 diabetes by about 30%. And we know that there's lots of different impacts on blood lipids, reducing your HDL. So we've got some really good ideas here. And I think on the herbals, we're getting more and more evidence here. There's some really good evidence for hibiscus tea and reductions in blood pressure. So there's lots of ways in which tea and herbals can find, and the science is catching up. And I thought there's a lot more emerging science. We'd always like more studies to show us and really sort of harden down on the exact mechanism as to how they work. But we need to have these human studies, then we need some lab studies to look at the real mechanism. But the science, there's a lot of good science out there. I see much more to come.
This is great. Now we're going to be back with Dr. Tim Bond in a moment after a few messages from our commercial partners.
the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to The Rewards on UK Health Radio on my weekly show, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing. I'm talking with Dr. Tim Bond. He's a chemist and natural health expert at the Tea Advisory Panel. You can find out more about them on their website, teaadvisorypanel.com, and also follow them on Twitter at Tea Advisory Pan. Today, we're talking about the nation's poor sleeping habits and stressful lives and how to use specific tea infusions to support ourselves to have better sleep and less stress. We've had a real whistle-stop tour of the amazing teas and how to use them, how long to brew them, what they can do for us, how they can change our physiology and get a result, and all of the studies that have been done as well that can support this, and also the emerging information that's coming out where we need more studies. But it's been wonderful to talk to you. Now, Tim, you're working at the Tea Advisory Panel. Can you tell us a bit more about your work there and what it's all about?
So we found that there was a lot of sort of misinformation out there. So we've touched on the hydrating. There have been studies out there to show that incorrect studies say that the fluoride in tea is a bad thing. We showed that that wasn't the case. There's a lot of misconceptions people have out there, but there's a lot of emerging science as well. So at the Tea Advisory Panel, I'm a natural product chemist, but we have nutritionists, dietitians, periodontists, and actually MDs, so medical doctors. So basically, our role really is we try and take all the information that's out there and then provide the media with impartial information, hopefully well explained, and we take a lot of the jargon out of it and just tell people straight what the science is telling us.
Wonderful. So do you publish your studies on your page, the Advisory Panel?
Public with the studies on there. Anyone in the audience who's familiar with, or is academic or familiar with academia, lots of these studies sit behind paywalls. So you've actually got to pay money to access the full study. What we do is we take a very strong view on this, that we've got to be science driven. So the studies we publish in the academic literature, and we have a number of criteria. So we need it to be robust science. So there's actually an Oxford University scale called the JDAD, J-O-D-A-D, the JDAD score, which shows whether the study is robust. And so we actually only really look at studies with a 3+ rating. We make sure that the study actually tells us what type of tea they use, not just some studies can just say tea. We don't know if it's chamomile, black tea, or whatever. We don't look at supplements. We only look at the tea as brewed, just because that's the way most people have their tea. So we've got these criteria, and we only include studies that pass those criteria. We then publish in the academic literature, open source, so it doesn't sit behind a paywall. And what happens when you submit a publication for a study, when you submit a publication or an article to be published, what happens is that article is then sent to a reviewer who is selected by the editor of the journal, someone who is well-versed in that field. So we make sure that that goes through a robust process and the reviewer can accept it. They can accept it, but say some changes need to be made, or they can reject it if they don't think the science is strong enough. So we make sure that all of our studies are published, and there are links to them all at thetadvisorypanel.com.
That sounds great. So you're really backing everything up and being very rigorous in your processes. Now, do you have any information on there on the different types of teas and their health benefits for our listeners today, in case they wanted to go on your website, teaadvisorypanel.com?
We do, and we have the statement. So you want to know about tea and hydration, or tea and fluoride, chamomile. So we've got sections there on tea, Camellia sinensis based, and the range of the most popular herbal infusions. So that's basically the barks, leaves and flowers that we can see. And so chamomile typically is a flower. Obviously cinnamon is a bark. Lavender obviously is a flower. Rose hips. So we've got sections on there on the types of teas and infusions, what they are, as well as the health benefits.
That's fantastic. So for anyone listening today that wants more information on tea and what it can do for you, we've talked about it a lot, but if you want more, please definitely go to teaadvisorypanel.com. Also follow them on Twitter at teaadvisorypan. And listeners today, I really do hope you've enjoyed listening to the show as much as I've enjoyed presenting the show. Thank you so much, Dr. Tim Bond. I really appreciate you coming on the show, and hopefully you'll come back again and talk to me about the other health benefits of different types of tea.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure. And I very much look forward to coming back.
Thank you so much.